Don Schubert against Karen Tobin Aaron. Melanie Williams, Michael D. Wright from the appellant, Ronald T. Burke from the appellate.
You may proceed.
May it please the court, I'm Mel Williams along with Michael Wright. We represent the appellant in this matter, Don Schumate. Respectfully, I'd like to request 3 minutes to reserve for rebuttal in my argument. We're asking this court to reverse the trial court's decision to sustain the demur to Mr. Schumate's suit because the appellee in this matter, Dr. Aaron, published a provably false statement about Mr. Schumate. The doctor reported to a third party that Mr. Schumate suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. That is false. He does not suffer from PTSD. He's never been diagnosed with PTSD by Dr. Aaron or any medical professional, nor do his medical records include any reference anywhere that he's ever been diagnosed with PTSD. It is a false statement, certainly a false statement as pled at the demur stage, where all the court considers is the allegations of the complaint taken as true.
May I interrupt you with a question, make sure I understand what you just said. So if the doctor genuinely believed, just hypothetically, I know you're pleading the opposite or attempting to plead the opposite, but if the doctor genuinely believed at the time the form was filled out that this patient really had this diagnosis, as arguably wrong as it may or may not be, depending on your medical point of view, then as I understand your theory, you would concede, well, right, that would be an opinion, that's not what I'm saying.
I don't believe I would concede based upon the facts that you're stating, which do change the facts of this case. If the doctor at the time she completed the form, you're saying genuinely believed that he had PTSD.
Yeah, made a judgment call, and the judgment call was, yeah, I know I've never said this before, and no other doctor said it, but my hunch is that he has this diagnosis. Would you say that would be within the scope of your claim?
I think under the facts as you've said stated them, I would still believe that there could be a claim in this matter.
Well, that's the very thing that makes your case weak, is the possibility that you might be saying something much broader than what it appears to be what you're saying.
Right. Accepting, of course, that what we're doing now is we're changing the facts of the case.
Of course, yes.
As under your scenario, if the judge genuinely believed that that was a true statement, that still doesn't mean that the statement is not false. She could genuinely be wrong.
But it's an opinion, is it not?
It is a medical diagnosis, although at the time she put out a form, she wasn't rendering a diagnosis. She was merely, as pled, reporting on a form a diagnosis that he supposedly already had, but does not. Now, back.
Well, your amended complaint doesn't even say that. It says, a blank on the form required Dr. Aaron to state Mr. Schumate's diagnosis or diagnoses.
Correct.
That doesn't say what he had been formerly diagnosed with, like
right.
You just stated.
The doctor was only asked to state the diagnosis, not to render a diagnosis. She didn't fill out the form while she's conducting an examination of Mr. Schumate. She wasn't evaluating whether or not he had the criteria for PTSD. She was just stating on the form what diagnosis he had.
So the difference is stating or rendering, and those two are different in your mind.
Going back to what the trial court's rationale, the trial court said that the doctor's act of filling out the form was in itself rendering a diagnosis. It was not, certainly not as pled. Now, if we want to change up the facts, that's not the demur stage. That's not where we are.
I think that's a question that Justice Kelsey is asking you. Do you think a diagnosis is subject to defamation?
Yes, I think it can be.
Okay, and tell me how you define a diagnosis. I thought it was an opinion, basically the art of identification of disease or a condition. Wouldn't that be a definition of diagnosis?
That to me, from what you're saying, sounds like a fair diagnosis or a fair definition of diagnosis.
And how would that be subject to defamation? How do you analyze that to make it subject to defamation?
Like the Cashin case, where the doctor in that case made statements about the effort of the doctor in attempting to resuscitate a patient or not, The court in that case said that that could be determined, whether it was true or false, through expert witness testimony. Similarly, in this case, expert witnesses could testify about whether or not Mr. Shumate has post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, isn't that somebody's opinion? It's an art. Diagnosis is an art.
But it's based upon factual connotations that can be proven true or false.
So if you're correct, then every doctor who makes a diagnosis, if it's somewhat incorrect, could be subject to defamation? Isn't that broadening our law of defamation dramatically?
I don't believe that it is broadening the definition. There is no case law that says doctors have any particular protection for making a diagnosis, for those opinions of diagnoses. There's no special
protection. But there is a First Amendment, and the First Amendment says that if what you're saying is essentially an opinion, then you cannot be subjected to state law tort liability. And I don't know how a diagnosis, if in fact someone's purporting to give a diagnosis, could be anything but an opinion. It's an opinion of a doctor. Can you imagine the response we would create in the medical industry if we said that every diagnosis could be subject to defamation liability, even though the defaming doctor was just giving an opinion of the facts before him or her?
Here again, what we're dealing with in this case is not that the doctor rendered a diagnosis of PTSD. We're saying she stated on a form that he has post-traumatic stress disorder when he doesn't. He doesn't have it. That the facts that
but
we're arguing right now are not the facts
but
of
remember,
this case.
Of course, and that's why I was introduced as a hypothetical, but the thing that stopped the trial judge, and I think the reason you lost this in trial court, is probably the same point we're on you right now on, which is where does your argument go? It sort of makes sense, sort of, that if someone misstates John Doe has a venereal disease and the doctor mistakenly says John Doe instead of John Smith, that's different. That's misstating that the doctor claims that someone has a venereal disease. But if some doctor really believes John Doe has a venereal disease, it's not probably going to be defamation if five other doctors come in and say, we just disagree with this doctor's diagnosis. And that's the distinction that stopped this case in the trial court and could stop it here if you can't draw a better one.
The example of a venereal disease would be something that you could easily determine whether it's true or false through a blood test or whatever was necessary for that condition to be evaluated. And of course, as this court knows, a venereal disease, some contagious disease, is something that is subject to defamation per se. So it's certainly recognized in the common law that stating that someone suffers from a contagious disease can be defamation per se, and that would even be the case back before we would have had modern medicine and blood tests.
Let me answer this, though, Counselor. You will concede, will you not, that different doctors can come up with different diagnoses based upon the same set of facts. How would you find which one was, how would you charge which one with defamation, which one not with defamation? It's not a science. This whole idea about diagnosis is you look at underlying facts and you come up with an opinion.
However, the manner by which to handle that is not to make a wholesale decision that an opinion of a doctor can never be subject to a suit for defamation. The manner to handle that would be through a privilege that has not been recognized that would say if the doctor does not in some way act to go beyond that privilege, for example, through ill, spite, making the statement with the knowledge that it was false, good faith, those exemptions given two matters of privilege, then that doctor's statement could be protected. That would be a manner by which the doctor would be able to defend himself or herself to a defamation suit by creating that privilege. Now, that's to say, nothing such as that has been created by this court to this point, but that would be a manner to address the concern that the court has is by saying, yes, your diagnosis could still be subject to defamation, but you would have at least a qualified privilege based upon the circumstances under which you made that statement. In this case, we have merely a false statement that was made by a doctor about a diagnosis that does not exist.
Seems to me that a better argument for you would be that a diagnosis is an opinion. However, when it is rendered recklessly or negligently, it is then subject to defamation. Wouldn't that be a better argument on your part?
And I believe, Your Honor, that is essentially what I'm saying as part of a privilege, that when you insert or inject privilege in the matter of defamation, there is that higher clear and convincing standard, which if you prove through that clear and convincing standard that the argument or that the statement was made recklessly or with the knowledge that it was false, then you would overcome that privilege. So perhaps you and I are describing different sides of the same coin.
Well, the problem is that your side of the coin sweeps in a lot of doctors. My side of the coin doesn't.
Then I prefer your side of the argument.
But why is that perspective not simply taking malpractice tort liability and converting it into defamation in those areas where the diagnosis could implicate some scandalous or some negative effect on someone's career?
Well, first, I appreciate you injecting the mention of the term malpractice because the trial court said that it may very well be malpractice. Therefore, in that case, we're not expanding the scope of liability for doctors just to say it could also be defamation.
If there are limitations on malpractice heavily regulated by statutory law, and this would be basically a way to get around all that.
You would be getting around the statutory regulation that you're mentioning, but there would still be the standards in place of proving it, of having the requirement that it be made recklessly.
Would there be a malpractice cap on your defamation liability?
Frankly, Your Honor, I hadn't thought of that. In this particular case, I don't know that I would have a problem with the cap being imposed in this case. But you're going back to your original argument about expanding the public policy argument, if you will, that we're expanding to where a number of actions of doctors could be brought into liability. We're really not doing that because the malpractice aspect of that could still create liability for those doctors rendering those false diagnoses. Whether or not you then choose to apply the malpractice rules, statutory requirements, such as the cap to that, I believe is beyond the purview of this case, and frankly hadn't been something that I had anticipated or considered at this stage of the proceedings, given when this matter was dismissed at the demur stage. That certainly could be something that could be further developed in the law, or perhaps the regulating agencies that consider those things would take into consideration whether to draw that into consideration on a defamation action of this nature. What we have here, however, is merely where a doctor has made a statement that is simply not true. The discussions about diagnoses, what's done by a doctor in rendering diagnoses, is not where we are at this stage.
Let me ask you this, counsel. We've always considered defamation to be an intentional tort. Can you have a defamation by accident or inadvertence or mistake?
Defamation, I believe the court's correct that it would be by intentional act, and I believe that comes into the consideration about whether any privilege would apply to that. And, of course, it's part of the proof. If the plaintiff can prove it was an intentional act, that becomes an issue to be decided. That's certainly a part of the plaintiff's proof. But at the demur stage of the proceedings, as alleged, she took the conscious act of decision to write PTSD on that form when it simply wasn't true.
What if it was a mistake or by inadvertence that she put that on the form? Does that make it less defamation?
That could allow the plaintiff or potentially the defendant to prevail in that action, but that's not a decision to make at this stage or the demur stage. That goes to a trial and whether or not the doctor would be able to show that it was an accident or an inadvertent act to do so. It's not a question to be decided at the demur stage of the proceedings.
Unless it's a part of the cause of action, in which case it is a question to be addressed in the pleadings. If it's an element of the cause of action and you have the burden of proof and you don't plead it, that's exactly what demurs are for.
True, but in this case, the court did not rely on whether or not the act was intentional or not in dismissing. That would be certainly subject to the court's trial court's liberal analysis of allowing amendments to be made to pleadings. That was never argued in this case. Certainly, as pled in the complaint, it was a volitional act. It's not something that is, as pledged, she did accidentally or without thought as to what she was writing on the form. Now, if she made a mistake and thought he had a post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis, that there again would be something to be decided not at the pleading stage, because it's not in the pleadings that it was an accident, but would be decided at some other stage of the proceedings, perhaps summary judgment, or perhaps at the trial, I think would be the most likely.
Under defamation law, the court has a special duty to examine the pleadings under First Amendment principles to determine if the alleged defamation is within or without the First Amendment scope. and opinion statements generally are, and assume for the sake of argument you're not conceding anything, that 99 out of 100 diagnoses are going to be construed by courts to be opinions. If you don't plead yourself out of the scope of that, and that's my first question to you, is I thought your whole theory was something far narrower than the extent to which you're arguing. I thought the whole theory was the doctor said, I have this diagnosis, and the misrepresentation was that she had it when she didn't, as opposed to, I have this diagnosis, and it's just plain wrong. Those are very different things. It's like promissory estoppel, the intent to deceive versus actual deception.
And as pled and as intended in this suit, the cause of action is that the doctor made a false statement. She reported there was a diagnosis when there was none. That is the purpose of this suit. And I'm sorry, my time has expired.
I have a question.
Oh, pardon.
I have one question. What do you see as the elements of your cause of action?
For a defamation action,
correct,
would be that there was a false statement made. I'm going to explain in that it is subject to being proven false, or if it's an opinion statement, that it has factual connotations contained within the statement that can be proven true or false, and that the statement was published, and then the resulting damages from the publishing of that, except perhaps in the issue of defamation per se, where damages would be presumed. I believe that would accurately state the elements for a defamation action.
All right, your time has expired.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honor, before I begin, if I may take a point of personal privilege, I think with my appearance here today, this is my, I've now had the pleasure of appearing before Judge Mileski, General District Court, Circuit Court, and this court. Three of the four, Judge, but I wish you well in your retirement.
Thank you very much.
Has he treated you well in every venue?
Yes, sir. He
has. All right.
That's the first time for
you. Way ahead of me.
That's right.
Your Honors, I think the court has really honed in on the public policy issue. And I think when you all came out here and issued the focus that this is really, he's asking for a broadening of the law of defamation. And even under your theory, Justice Lemons, you're injecting additional provisions into what is known as the defamation law. And as Justice Kelsey said, this would be a disaster in the medical community. As you said, sir, in a medical malpractice case, and I've been doing this for a long time, we've got to have experts. We have the malpractice cap. The response would be incredible.
Counsel, is the court's ruling too broad? Perhaps opposing counsel's argument is too broad. But is the court's ruling too broad? What if the doctor, knowing that the patient did not have a disease that would cause them to question their ability to do their job, maliciously wrote on the form, this person has PTSD. Would that not be the proper subject of a defamation suit?
Your Honor, again, the problem is it's an opinion, and the opinion can be wrong. He hasn't pled maliciously.
No, I'm giving you a hypothetical.
No, I understand.
Hold on. If you would wait just a minute, please. I'm giving you a hypothetical. Because it seems to me that perhaps the opinion that the court ruled is too broad, that a diagnosis could never be the subject of defamation. Is that your position?
I believe so, Your Honor, because it's an opinion and because it's a diagnosis and because it is
the problem with her hypothetical. If it's knowingly done falsely, it can't be an opinion.
Well, Your Honor, It still is, when you're talking about a diagnosis, and the way I understood the pleadings in this case was that the allegation only is that it was false, not that it was done knowingly or intentionally.
Right, well, but we're testing the outer boundaries of all of this.
If someone said
this person has a sexually transmitted disease and knows that that person does not,
right,
that can't be an opinion.
Well, Your Honor, with all due respect,
because
I think
the statement of that someone has the statement is whether or not I hold the opinion. I mean, this is the distinction that we're trying to get from both of you. Suppose I were to say, one of us were to say, John Doe's a lawyer. He's a horrible lawyer. He should be disbarred. That's my opinion.
Correct.
Well, whether or not John Doe's a horrible lawyer is probably going to be an opinion, right?
right.
But whether I personally believe he's a horrible lawyer and that he should be disbarred is a statement, a representation that would be of my opinion. But suppose I don't hold that opinion. I'm just being malicious. I just hate the guy. I don't think he's done anything deserving that, and I admit it, let's say. That's the representation. It's exactly like promissory fraud. Fraud, you know, you don't complete a contract. Okay, fine, you got a breach of contract action. At the time you signed the contract, you had zero intent to complete the contract. But you told him you had the intent. Okay, there's your fraud. Isn't that the distinction the chief is bringing out, that if you state you have an opinion when you really don't? The representation is not whether the alleged opinion is right or wrong, but whether you have it or not.
It's a very slippery slope, and I understand where you're going, sir. I do. I mean, but it's an incredibly slippery slope that I think opens the door to so much danger in the way it's pled and the way that the litigation would come up. And then my question is, if that's the case, then does that convert it into somewhat of a standard of care medical malpractice action? Are we going to have experts testify about whether or not somebody's opinion was valid, whether or not they were malicious, intended to be malicious? Then are the experts going to get sued for rendering those opinions?
Hey, we're the ones that get to ask the questions.
I'm trying to respond, sir.
Well, slippery slope might not be the very best response that's available. Let's look at pages 117 and 118 of the joint appendix, if you would. Because I think this lays the finger on what the Chief Justice and Justice Powell are talking about. Starting on page 117, line 5, going through 118, line 17, the trial judge basically says that if it's a diagnosis, it can never be subject to defamation. And the trial judge even says that the diagnosis can be wrong, it can be negligent, or it can even be grossly negligent. And if it's a diagnosis, defamation is off the table. What is your best case to support that statement?
Well, he also goes on and says that the remedy for this is not defamation.
But defamation is why we're here. What's your best case to support that very clear statement by the trial judge when he rendered this ruling?
What I was getting at that, Judge, is then they can create a negligence action based on maliciousness.
I'm not asking for your slippery slope. I'm not asking for your policy. I'm asking, what is your case? Give me one case.
Yeah.
You would say, this is the case that I will stand on for my argument in terms of what that judge said at that time.
Well, I don't think there is a specific case out there, but the Cashin case is probably, you know, the closest that this court has come up with. Are you asking me for a factual situation or an actual case from the court?
Actually, what case do you rely upon to support what the judge said?
I think Cashin, because what the plaintiff is trying to argue is that he took the position that Cashin says that any defamation, any medical opinion could constitute defamation under Cashin. Cashin was so totally different. Cashin, as counsel said, was one doctor commenting on the efforts of another doctor. It had nothing to do with the diagnosis. So we have a differential distinction here. The diagnosis is the act of practicing medicine under Code 54.2900. Clearly, the diagnosis of the definition of medicine, or diagnosis, is defined as part of the practice of medicine. So,
well, isn't the answer, it's an opinion. And there's 100 cases saying that opinions
right.
are protected by the First Amendment. You say that car is a lousy car, you say that person is a lousy person, you say that person is ugly. I mean, those are opinions, and whether you can find witnesses to say, no, actually, they're not ugly, and the car is really not a lousy car, it doesn't matter. It's still a subjective opinion, and thus First Amendment protects it. But that doesn't answer the question of whether or not the alleged opinion holder actually holds the opinion or not.
But again, the problem is it's in the context of practicing medicine. It's in the context of the physician-patient relationship. And that's the distinction, and that's what the judge was relying on in his letter opinion and in his comments. So I think that's where he was going. Now,
can I interrupt for a second? Turn to page 61 in the joint appendix, and maybe this will help you to understand what we are all wrestling with. and look at paragraphs 29 and 30 on page 61, where they allege that the doctor knew that the diagnosis she put down was false, and she did it maliciously. So, I mean, I think that's what we're trying to, I understand, to grapple with. I understand. But again, the problem is when you are dealing with a physician-patient relationship and you're dealing with the actual practice of medicine as this court and the statutes have defined it, then the question becomes is how far are you going to take it? And I understand it's an opinion and it could be wrong. And it may be a matter of proof. I understand that point also. But at the same time, I don't see how this court could possibly open the door, even with a qualified privilege, and not create a disaster in the way of a flood of litigation.
Counsel, I'm just not buying the parade of horribles for two reasons. First of all, doctor-patient confidentiality. 99 times out of 100, the doctor's diagnosis is not going to be disclosed to a third party. And then if it is disclosed to a third party, but it's a third party who has the right to know it, who has a duty to be within that orbit, then you have the qualified privilege. Now, qualified privilege doesn't come in at the demurrer stage. But if the doctor had been told on this form, photocopy your physician notes that has the diagnosis, I don't think we'd be here. It wasn't a matter of, here is my diagnosis, and reading what the diagnosis is. As it is pleaded, getting away from our hypotheticals, as it's pleaded, the issue is there was never a diagnosis of PTSD, and that to write it down was either negligent, was done with malice. Just like if a doctor doesn't like someone and says, I'm just going to write down AIDS, or write down a venereal disease because I want to make life miserable for someone. I don't think that a doctor would typically do that. I'm not arguing that a doctor would. But I think there are times when defamation can occur when it's outside of the context of rendering the diagnosis at that particular time.
Two things. As to this case, the pleading was that the form stated the diagnosis or diagnoses. And the trial court looked at that and said he interpreted that to mean current diagnosis or diagnoses. So we don't know under the facts whether that was a diagnosis she rendered at the time, or whether and just
then how can it be determined on demur?
Well, because that it's
if we don't know it from the facts, isn't that for the fact finder to determine? Was this a statement of a prior diagnosis, or is this rendering a diagnosis right then? He says in his pleading it was a false statement, because there was never such a diagnosis. How can we break through
because,
that statement on demur?
Because the pleading was not sufficient and didn't state. It just said that she was required to state the current or state diagnosis or diagnoses. Here's the problem, Judge, is in any workers' comp claimant that we can have any workers' comp claimant come in and say, you know what, I don't like the ruling. I don't like what my doctor said. That the workers' comp claimant could come in and say, let's just say the patient does have PTSD, okay, or a sexually transmitted disease. The doctor writes it down, and the claimant's upset because he didn't. Even though the claimant has said, "Give me this information to my workers' comp carrier," if this court says that he can go out and sue his doctor because if he uses the buzzword malicious, then every workers' comp carrier or physician who does a workers' comp evaluation is subject to that because the workers' comp...
But, Counsel, you're resisting the other part of the argument, and I understand what you're saying, that we certainly don't want to open the floodgates if they would be open for every disgruntled patient to bring a suit. But the other part of the argument is, do we want to close the door for the disgruntled doctor to be able to put down a statement that was never their diagnosis and protect themselves behind the shield of that was my diagnosis when it was never their diagnosis?
Well, Your Honor, I think there are other remedies available. The other remedy is, if that's the case...
But this client has and counsel have chosen the remedy of defamation. That's what the judge said. You got other remedies. We're not going to let you have defamation because you can have other remedies. But her question is, because there might be other remedies, do we close the door to defamation no matter how egregious the facts are?
Your Honor, I think the existing law is very clear that it should be closed the way it was. Now, the question is, if you're going to expand it, obviously you have the right to do that, and I can't stop you. But I don't think under the existing law that the dangers in doing so, and I understand the court's argument,
You're back to your policy argument. And again, the problem is that we don't have summary judgment for most cases here in Virginia. And I'm looking at a pleading that says he has never been diagnosed with PTSD. Dr. Aaron never diagnosed him with PTSD. She later stated that he does not have PTSD and has not suffered a traumatic event that would lead to such a diagnosis. The pleading then says that she acted recklessly, she knew her statements were false, and they were done with common law malice. If defamation can exist in the context of a doctor-patient relationship, it seems that this pleading is sufficient. Now, it might be you never get to a jury. There's a whole lot of problems with the case. But we have to decide it on the pleading itself. And you indicated the pleading wasn't sufficient. It wasn't specific. It's very specific.
Well, Your Honor, with all due respect, I really do not believe under the existing law and under Cashin that it complies. I really don't. But my time is up.
Thank you very much. Call the next case.